This episode of Trenton Waves is brought to you by...
If you're a digital video editor, you need Edius. Edius is all about giving editors the creative freedom to create any application environment. It is designed to put the power in the hands of the editor with incredible format flexibility. Edius, editing refined. Edius allows multiple users to edit, work with content as it imports, and getting content to the user incredibly fast. Check out the latest version of Edius that just launched. Download a 30-day trial today at edius.net.
I'm Ayana Iman, and I'm the host of Authentic Combos. I am hosting the next installation, Breaking Up With Broke, a conversation on Black and Brown wealth, on Saturday, November 9th at the Grounds for Sculpture. I hope to see you there. Tickets can be purchased at breakingupwithbroke.eventbrite.com.
What's up, everyone? I'm Von Leek, host of the Stay Woke podcast, the latest and greatest podcast featuring games, reviews, debates, and interviews. Tune in every week as my guests and I discuss different social issues, as well as what's going on in pop culture, music, and tons more. So, subscribe now, and until then, always remember to stay woke.
Hey, this is Jesse Vincent from Artworks Trenton, and you're listening to Trenton Waves podcast.
It's the official, unofficial podcast of the city of Trenton, New Jersey. Yeah. With your host, Frank Ferocious Sasso.
Trenton still makes and the world still takes.
Hang tight, because we're going to meet the lifeblood behind the culture, food, arts, music, pork roll, punk rock, hair, books, education, talent, events, of Trenton, New Jersey. Here's Frank.
Trenton Waves, that's right. It is Trenton Waves yet again. And this week, I'm flying solo.
But that doesn't mean that it's not going to be entertaining.
Oh, boy.
You hear that? Oh, boy. Oh, boy is right. Because I have with me probably the most elusive cat in Trenton. He's laughing. I have him purposely. He's not sitting next to me. He's sitting way across the table from me for a very good reason. He's my peoples. It's James Peoples. Yes, that's right. James Peoples is with us today. Oh, wow, look at that crowd. They love you already.
You haven't even started talking yet.
Gee, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's been a while since we've been trying to arrange this conversation. So.
I think since episode one.
Yeah, pretty much.
At least 32 weeks ago.
It's only been 32 weeks?
But you're always like, I'll see what I can do. Let's see what you can do. Just get down here and record, will you, please?
You could almost have a child in 32 weeks, man. That's not good.
Let me see. 32 weeks is how many months is that?
Eight, I think. Eight times four, 32.
Oh, no math, man. Don't hit me with math. Any time of the day, not even early in the morning. So how you been, man?
I've been exceptionally well, man.
What's going on with you?
Living the best life I've ever lived right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, things are kind of coming together on a lot of different planes. I mean, my brother Joseph and I are in
Joe
business
Peoples.
Together. We're progressing and we're doing a lot of things and it's become really good and my family's come back together. And, you know, you and I have talked about a couple of things, a couple of other aspects of my life that are really kind of coming together on a personal and even a faith-based level, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, things are really kind of working really well for me. So I'm happy about where I am right now and family is playing a whole huge role in everything that's going on. Mm. So I'm really happy to be alive right now. I got a chance to see a great play a couple of weeks ago. And that, on the anniversary of my father's death, I wrote, you know, this thing from Hamilton, Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my father was who died, I'm who lived, and I'm the one who gets to tell his story. And that's just a great time to be alive right now because I'm delving into a lot of stuff and getting connected with a lot of people.
So. Right. I actually met your brother first before I met you.
You did. That was at the BNI meeting. We were kind of interchangeable parts. When he couldn't make the meeting, we would kind of take places of each other,
right.
kind of like you did for the company you were working
at the time.
Right, but we were kind of interchangeable. But yeah, that was you met Joe first, and then I kind of stumbled in, and there was this whirlwind of a personality, kind of a Tasmanian devil, kind of whirling in the room, and that was you, man.
Oh, that was me.
That was you.
Oh, I thought you meant yourself.
Oh, no. I came in quiet as a church mouse. Mm. There's some disbelief in that. Mm.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing with your church mouse. You come in quiet as a church mouse, and then you make all these problems.
No one's going to suspect the church mouse.
They're going to suspect Tasmanian devil. And, you know, you said, the first thing you ever said to me was, hey, man, why don't you join the board of Artworks? Looking for a board member. I'm like, I don't even know who you are. Where's Joe?
That was back in the days, yeah, man, when I was on the board, definitely, man. And, you know, Artworks Trenton is such a dynamic force in town. I mean, so all of you understand, my conversations about getting him to join the board of Artworks kind of culminated in earlier this year, me getting Frank to join the board of the Trent House.
Which I'm now on.
In Trenton. So if you have somebody that you're thinking about getting them involved in nonprofit service, make sure that you stay persistent with them, because it'll only take 4, 5, maybe 6 years for that to kind of come to fruition wherever you happen to land at that point in time. But Frank's been such an honorable person to, again, I've found some really honorable people to serve with on some of these nonprofit boards. So yeah, I wanted you to join the Board of Artworks at that time. I might have been chair of the board at that point, but that was just... It was a great time to serve, man, and it's a great organization. So you want to go to artworkstrenton.org and check them out. Make sure you support them. Make sure you come down and check out the Trent House, the William Trent House website. See the graphics that Frank designed that help make us even more beautiful.
Are my graphics on there?
I hope they are. They're in my collection.
Well, check it out. If they're not on there, shoot us an email.
Yeah, please let us know.
Because, you know, we can't check that out.
Yeah, we don't have technology.
We have a board meeting tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
So you're an electrician.
I am.
So is it your own company, or is it Joe's company and you work with him, or what?
My brother is the president of the company. I'm the vice president of the company.
Okay.
It's a family business. So my father was one of the first licensed black electricians on the East Coast. My father died in 73. My brother graduated from high school in 79, mm-hmm. somewhere along in there. He went to college, studied electrical engineering, came back, joined the local union, worked as a union electrician for a long time, and then started his own company. If I remember correctly, he may even still pay. We don't work out. I'm not a union member. My brother may still pay his dues. I'm not sure. But he doesn't do any work out of the hall anymore. We've been a family-run business, just the two of us primarily. We've had other people come and work with us here and there. But this is a family-run business. And our family, if you carry my father's experience forward, and then bring it all the way through to where we are right now, that would probably give my family somewhere around 70 years worth of experience in the electrical contracting business. Well, if you consider my brother started in 80.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, started around that time. Over, that would give him that all the time.
Over 30 years ago.
And my father my father worked for U.S. Steel, like a lot of the people in this region did. My father worked at the Fairless Steel Works over there. He did some work there, some electrical work and some other stuff, but he had his own business.
Right.
And in fact, his business card, we found one of the last of his business cards years after his death. And I do some photography work, and it's a company called Power and Light Photography. And because of my father's business card, there were two phrases: no job too big or too small.
Right.
And his business was electricity for power and light. And so that's where the name of my photography business came from. Number one, I'm an electrician. And I'm a photographer, so I work with power and light. But I took that phrase off of my father's business card, and I carry that forward with me today as the name of my photography company.
Now, question.
Yes.
What's the name of the electric company?
Allied Federal Electric Corporation is the name of the company that my brother and I operate today.
Allied Federal.
Mm-hmm. We're located right here.
You said something interesting. He said, number one, I'm an electrician. Number two, I'm a photographer. I don't buy that for a second. I think number one, you're a photographer.
No. Well, you know what?
Is electricity your passion, really?
What's passionate about it is that I get to ride through town, and if I have someone with me or I'm riding with someone, I can say, you know, we fixed that problem, and we fixed that problem, and we worked on that building, and we helped build that building, and we did that.
Who are these people you're telling this to?
Whomever I may be with at that time. There's so many places. Our company has been around and working in this region. I was a computer engineer. I worked almost 15 years in the tech business. Mm-hmm. So I got laid off after September 11th, and I started looking for these high-priced, high-dollared CIO, blah, blah, blah jobs.
Of 2001.
2001, okay. Yeah, 9/11. So I got laid off right in the fallout after that. Mm-hmm. I came back. I was floundering, looking at all these high-priced jobs, going on these 8 and 9 hour job interviews, losing my mind, and my brother needed someone to manage the field operations for him. So I went to go work for the family business.
Okay.
And at that time, he had a bunch of other guys working with him, but they didn't have the same connection to the business that obviously the people whose last names are on the business are going to have.
Exactly, right.
So that's why I came in to work with him on that, and we've worked together now for the past 18, 19 years.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So yeah.
For a family business. To be able to work together for more than five minutes.
There are some days when, yeah... Yeah, you told me some of that language can't be used on the air, so yeah, we'll just skip all that.
If you've ever seen the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is like this funny cop show, and there's a character there who plays the captain, who looks exactly like Joe Peoples.
Oh, my Lord. I haven't seen the show, but I'm going to have to go check it out now. That's going to be
absolutely
hilarious.
I think it's Andre Brower.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's a very famous actor.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, I know him.
City of Angels with Nicolas Cage.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know. Yeah.
But it totally, every time I see that show, I think it's Joe Peoples. So that's pretty cool. So you're Joe's older brother.
I'm Joe's younger brother.
Wow. Wow. Kick them when they're up, kick them when they're down. Kick them when they're up, kick them all around.
Wait a second.
Wow. Joe is older than
so
I am.
Joe's older.
I am the youngest of the children that my mother had.
Wow.
Yeah. My sister is the oldest of the children that my mother had. My brother John is there and in between there. And then there's
Joe, you have another brother.
I have another brother, absolutely. My brother worked for the state of New Jersey for probably close to 44, 45 years. When he left, he was one of the top IT people in the Treasury Department.
And taxation. I missed it if you said it. You said Joe's the oldest?
Vera, my sister, is the oldest.
No, the oldest boy.
John is the... My parent... good Catholic family. You know, you had...
Wait. Let's start from the top. You were born in Trenton.
I was born in St. Francis Hospital in Trenton. I grew up in Ewing Township. I graduated Ewing High School. I live in Trenton now.
Right, I know. I'm saying, until when?
What do you mean?
You grew up in Trenton. You grew up in Ewing.
I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
There was a military interlude in there. I came back. Went to work for a year. I went to Trenton State College. I'll say it one more time.
Trenton State College.
I went to TSC. And
TSC.
And then went to work for an engineering firm in Princeton. And after leaving them, I went to work for a computer engineering company out in Valley Forge and worked for them until 2001. So.
Okay. And then you moved to Trenton?
Well, during those summers when I was in college, I stayed in the house that I'm staying in right now in West Trenton. So my sister's owned this house for 40 some odd years. She bought it before my mother passed away, which would be, I guess, I don't remember. My mom died in 83. So I figured out, 36 years now?
Okay.
So my sister bought the house right before that.
Right.
So all of her siblings and all of us have at some point in time lived in that house. So during the summers when school was out, right, I would actually stay in the house that I'm living in now. Uh-huh. And we're working on a lot of the remodeling and stuff on that. And it had some renters in it and stuff like that. So we're trying to renovate it and bring it back up and all that other kind of stuff. But it's been in the family. My sister has owned it now for almost 40 years. So I've lived in Trenton off and on, but in between that, I lived on campus when I was in college because I wanted the full college experience. So those years I was in college, even though I was born and raised 4 minutes off the campus, I lived on campus for every year because back then, as an independent student, you could do that. It was covered in your tuition.
Sure.
I think if I remember correctly, the total amount of my college education was somewhere equivalent to what 1 year as an in-state or out-of-state student, full tuition, room and board, costs today. I think my entire college education cost somewhere around, I think it was about $8,000 or $9,000 a year. So it was about $36,000 to $40,000.
Wow.
I think right now, if you look up on the website, I think the College of New Jersey right now is somewhere around $32,000 or $33,000 a year.
What?
I mean, that's inflation in all those years. I mean, insane. You'd have to go and look it up. But the last time I did it, it was just a joke to me. I was like, oh my God, I got, you know, my student loans were next to nothing because I was an orphan. My father died at 73.
Okay.
My mom died in 83. So by the time I got to apply to college, you know, I had great SAT scores. I was smarter than I needed to be. So
wow,
I got,
really?
That comes
as a shock, too. decent student.
I was not a decent student, but I scored pretty well in the SATs. So I could have gone wherever I wanted to go at that point in time.
Okay, so you scored well.
Correct. I was not a great student. No, I was just smarter than I needed to be at the time.
Right.
So I went I went to Trenton State and studied politics, which, you know, back in the 80s, no one really wanted to come out and be a politician, which is why with my technology background, I've had a computer since I was a little kid. My family's had technology around us all of our lives. So I've had a computer since I was 16 years old. So
would you have a Commodore 64 or something?
Actually, even worse than that, man. I had a Timex Sinclair 1000, which was this little membrane keyboard thing with a wobble-free memory pack. All you nerds out there will know exactly what that means. It saved all its programs in BASIC on a cassette player. And I say all these things. It plugged into the black and white input on your television set.
Oh, man.
The coolest part about it is somewhere in a storage bin somewhere, I still have the first piece of...
Does it still work?
It would probably still work. It needs a 9-volt... battery or a 9-volt power supply to operate.
Man.
It's that old. But my sister got me that when I was 16 years old. So that was the first computer that I got. So that's what led me into all that technology stuff. You know, it started out as a summer job when I was in college, and then I progressed from there and went to work for them full time. And then I left there, and one of the guys who had left before me, sadly, the guy who hired me to do that job, hired me as the first person in a technical support center that went on to become one of the best tech support centers in the nation. David passed away a couple of years ago. I owe a lot to him. A lot of my lot of my personal professional success I owe to him, because he kind of reached back and grabbed me from where I was and brought me to work with him as the first employee of this tech center, tech support center that we put together. And it got built up around the two of us. And then as ageism happens to happen at that point in time, back in the early, late 90s, early 2000s, they had him train his replacement and then let him go. And he just...
Training the replacement.
He trained his replacement. They let him go. And he, at his age, he could never get back into the tech industry, and he would never come back at the type of salary that he had.
Right.
And he suffered from COPD, and he lost his battle a couple years ago.
Oh boy.
But he was many people's mentor. And,
I think most successful people, it's the pattern. They have that one person.
Yeah.
You have that one person that believes in you, that motivates you, that encourages you, and it sends you on your way. Yeah. Now, I didn't realize that a student loan, if you don't have your parents around, like that plays a part in getting the loan.
Absolutely. Back then, I don't know what it is today, but as an I was considered an independent student. So there's a questionnaire that says on financial aid, what is your parents' income? Heavenly. So my parents made no money. So it came down to how much money I was actually making at that point in time.
Okay.
August is a tough month for me because both my parents died 9 years and 51 weeks apart, more or less. My father died on the 26th. My mom died on the 18th. They died 9 years and 51 weeks apart. So my father died in 73 and my mom died in 83, right after I graduated from high school. And so between then and my birthday in early mid-September, I was a ward of my sister's legally. I was 17 years old, so I was not legally, I had a guardian. My sister was legally my guardian until I turned 18. And my income at that point in time was the Social Security checks that had come in for my parents, because I was the last sole surviving member. I was the surviving child.
Oh, so they would still come in?
So, in fact, my checking account, which the bank account got closed, and maybe it's good that I let go of some of those memories, but up until last year, I still had the checking account that I started back in 1983. The bank, with all their outrageous fees and without telling me, actually closed this account on me, and I didn't know what was happening. But the last Social Security check that I got from my parents' accounts, I started a checking account when I was 17 years old, and I still had that checking account until last year.
Wow.
And I would just keep it open just in deference to how it got started, you know.
Right.
But in some ways, I think it's good. There's been a lot of cleansing that's happened in life. There have been a lot of letting go of a lot of things that I knew that I needed to do over time. So,
yeah, we talked a little bit about that.
So, So I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to kind of move on from that, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, you think when any of these major things happen in your life, the death of a parent or this, that, or that major change, how will I go on? Mm-hmm. I thought when my mother died, because I was too young to really realize what was happening when my father died. When my mother died, I thought, how will I go on? And here I am now, 36 years later, reflecting back on it in a more positive way. And
you're going on.
I'm going on. And there was a story that I heard on, it was like an NPR story, and I can't remember exactly what it was about, but they were talking about a movie or a book where the person was talking to a ghost, and that ghost was saying to them, you know, the person was saying to them, I've been celebrating you. Mm-hmm. And the ghost said, no, you're not. You've been celebrating my death. The essence of it was basically, you know, the date that is most memorable to me are the date that my parents left. And earlier this year, right as that anniversary was coming up, I reached out to my brothers and sisters and I said, please tell me when our parents were born. Because I didn't know. For me, being 7 and 17, the most memorable thing to me was the day that my parents died. And so the lesson that I got out of listening to that was, I need to go back and find out more about how they lived.
Exactly. Right? It's not so much how they died. How did they live?
Absolutely. So the date that it was so stuck in my head, I can tell you those days. I know those dates.
Right.
They factor into so many things in my life. When I'm looking for numbers for things, I will pull those numbers out of the air and mix them up because I know them by heart. I found out that my father was born on July 1st, 1919. Hmm. So if my father were alive today, he'd be 100 years old.
Wow, that's right.
Yes. I am the same age my father was when he passed away.
Great.
54 years old, and I am the same age that my father was when he died. Now, he died of what probably at that point in time would have been mesothelioma or something similar to that. He died of pneumonia-like symptoms. They worked in the steel mill, and all of these people in this community, in this area, from here through Morrisville, all through Ewing, people worked at U.S. Steel, or people worked at General Motors. People worked at the manufacturing things. When this region made stuff, these people worked there, and nobody really cared about their health or their wellness. So the possibility of you being in an asbestos-filled environment, especially inside of a steel mill, and having worked there for decades, the possibility of a lot of people in this region having suffered from a word like mesothelioma, which was a word that no one could even think of in 1973. So when all those men were dying, and they were dying of these crazy symptoms, they were just dying. And if they knew about it, it was like just like the cigarette industry knowing about emphysema and all the other things. Nobody was telling the public about it. So when my father died, he died of something that he laid in bed at home and probably died of something similar to mesothelioma, as far as we know, like a congestive heart failure, whatever it may have been, whatever it was. That's what took my father's life, and my mother died of what is listed basically as a massive coronary. Now, both of them smoked. Both of them had other different lifestyles. My mom and dad had different lifestyles than what I have today, and I'm trying to take better care of my health and trying to be more physically active and do a lot of other things.
Yeah, now, which is leads me to my next topic. So I'm sitting inside one day, and my wife says to me, "Hey, you know what? I just saw something on Facebook." I said, "What?" She goes, "You know, James Peoples, he takes kickboxing lessons." I'm like, "What? James Peoples? Listen, I think of James Peoples. The one thing I don't think of is a kickboxer. No offense. I'm just saying, you know."
Thanks, man. I'm just saying.
I'm sorry.
Whatever, you know.
But God bless you. I think it's great that you're doing it. How long have you been kickboxing now?
Well, I was in the midst of going through a big struggle and some stuff. And I have a friend of mine who kind of also serves as one of my therapists. And he said, "You know, you really need to beat up somebody else aside from yourself. So I advise you find something to do." And so my friend David said, "You should go and..." I said, "Dave, you know, I've always wanted to take kickboxing." And he said, "Remember, and again, this is promoting a local business. It's in Ewing, so it's in Mercer County."
I'll allow it.
I'll allow it this one time. So my martial arts instructor is a guy named Charlie Vinch out of Budo out in Ewing. And Charlie and I and David used to work together as bouncers on a nightclub.
Wait a second. Charlie Vinch as in Vinch?
Yeah, as in Vinch.
The Vinch family.
Yes, the Vinch family.
Oh, they're very well known.
Yes, they are. Okay. Yeah, so Dave said, "You know, I've been following Charlie of late. Charlie looks like he's gotten some really great things going on with the school. He's gotten a couple of more degrees in some of the other things that he's doing. I recommend you give Charlie a call." And so that Sunday, I sent Charlie a DM on Facebook. We talked extensively for about an hour. And Charlie said, "Come in next week, do a trial program." That was early in August. My 1 month trial program through the summer covered my gi, my pads, my gloves, t-shirt for the gym, everything that I needed in order to get started. No mouth guard. they just announced that Mondays and Wednesdays there's going to be open sparring for the last 15 minutes of our training session.
Really?
Yeah.
Can anybody come in?
No.
I'm just asking. You're saying open sparring
for the open people in me? Our class.
I don't know this.
Yeah.
You know, saying, "Hey, Vince, you know, James never told me. It's only for members."
Oh, man. You know, he's got a couple. He's got, like you, of fights under his belt.
Listen, I have a feeling that Vinch would allow you and I to spar during open match. He'd probably videotape it.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my head hurts already. There's one guy in our class that he has really fast, really heavy hands. And there was one day we were just training, and I keep hearing the instructor go, "We're only going at 70%. And I would look out, and his eyes would be as wide as saucers because he's looking at me like, "Oh, that's a pork chop. I'm getting ready to eat." He's a really, really good fighter. He's got really good hands. He's trained off and on. For me, and this is a recommendation to any of you who are considering this, I walked in with any childhood fights, street fights, blah, blah, blah. I'm a grown adult now, so I haven't been in a fight in decades. But anything from my childhood was the fighting that I had. I'd never taken a martial arts class or anything like that before. Never done any training. Walked in. You'll find that if you get to the right place with the right instructors, you have the right community, they will take care of you. They like their toys. They're not going to break them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But why kickbox? Kickboxing is a Japanese hybrid martial art. I mean, it was taken from karate, Western boxing, and Muay Thai.
This is a Muay Thai practice.
So it is a Muay Thai.
I mean, that's
so it's
what
not
I'm
really
saying.
Kickboxing.
It's not really. I mean, it's called a kickboxing class, but I mean, the emphasis of the school is BJJ, is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and Muay Thai. So if you look at the emblem for the school, it says both, but it's more of a kickboxing class, and we are going to get, they're teaching us how to stand up and how to grapple. That's the whole point of it. If you're in a situation,
which is where the BJJ,
right? So if you can't defeat the guy on your feet, if you can get him on the ground and you have the techniques to do that. Now, I'm not taking the jiu-jitsu classes right now because my brain is so full of so many other things. I'm taking one discipline at a time.
But it's all about getting them on the ground.
I understand
that. It's all about that.
I understand that. Right now, I've got a year of learning how to throw my hands. If down the road I want to incorporate that,
yeah.
I can do that. I can always go back to them and add that to
it. You have to do that. You have to incorporate. It's like getting a car without a steering wheel. It's part of it.
Really?
Yeah,
okay. I mean, Charlie emphasized that. So I still have the gi. I still have everything.
Okay.
I haven't not decided to do it. But again, in the conversations that I was having, for the first time in my life, in my fifth decade in life, I found myself in the midst of an anxiety attack back in August.
Okay.
And it was...
This past August?
This past August. It was... This is
2019?
How 2019. This is how I ended up in a jiu-jitsu class. I mean, in a kickboxing class.
Oh,
I was
wow.
In a vehicle as a passenger on a long ride, and things started to swirl in my head, and I got very uncomfortable, and I couldn't sit still, and I couldn't stretch. There were answers to questions that I knew I could never get, and it really began to play on me, and it was the first time it had ever happened. And so I reached out and I said, I feel like this is what's happening to me,
right.
And I feel like an attention deficit addled child right now. I can't sit still. I'm wringing my hands. I'm rocking back and forth. I'm sitting in the front seat of a vehicle. I'm on a 2-hour drive and I'm not in control. And my life is out of control. I need to do something. What can I do? And so the outcome of that day was going to this, because you got to be singularly focused on not letting the guy in front of you punch you in the face.
One thing you're focused on.
Don't get hit.
Right. Exactly.
So that was why I started taking a kickboxing class, is because if you've never had that feeling, the feeling of being completely out of control, it was overwhelming because later on that day, I found myself back in my own vehicle and I was driving and I got to a point where I came up over a rise and I looked in front of me and there was an accident somewhere in the distance and I saw all the brake lights in front of me and it overwhelmed me again and I pulled into a parking lot at a corporate center that was closing down. It was around 5 o'clock and I found myself walking around in the parking lot. Like, I have to get my heart rate down. I have to calm down.
Right.
I have to calm down. And so that's really what drove it, was just that there were these issues that have kind of come together. And at this point in time in my life, for the first time in my life, I found myself just, and I've survived the death of my parents. I've survived losing my career. I've survived all these other things. I've survived winning love and losing love and all these other things, right? And at this point in time, things just built up and we're at a point where I knew that things were out of control in a way that I couldn't do anything about.
Right.
And so that's what spawned the kickboxing, was
interesting
doing something like that.
It's interesting. I'm just saying, it's interesting that you picked kickboxing, because it's still relatively new. Honestly, I mean, it was developed in Japan in the 1960s, I believe. And then 10 years after that, it started getting a lot of Americans doing it. And it's still kind of young, the whole kickboxing thing. I'm just kind of surprised you picked that of all things. Any reason why that particular discipline?
Because from what I can see, boxing has a lot of attributes that can help you with cardiovascular and other aspects of things, where there are some other martial arts that are more about concentrative efforts that are slower and more moving. Even the jiu-jitsu class, if you're in the jiu-jitsu class, there's a lot of time spent doing a lot of instruction. The classes that they do have some advanced classes, which I've never seen, but the class that I'm in is a mixed class, so you'll have all levels. You'll have white belts sitting next to gray belts. I mean, it's a completely mixed class in the jiu-jitsu class, so you'll have all levels of experience in that class. And so they will go over everything from the basic moves to more advanced things. So when I got a chance to do both of them, the membership that I signed up for gave me the ability to do both for 30 days. So I did the first kickboxing class, loved the amount of sweat that came pouring off my body, loved the ability to be focused and really, really worried about, because at that point in time, I will say this, if you're going to do this, if you don't know what you're doing, raise your hand and let someone know. Because when you walk out into a class, no one's going to ask you what you know.
Right.
The assumption is if you decided to come and take this, you at least have the, you have an idea how to either throw a punch or throw a kick, which I didn't
or
know how to do
guard.
Well. Or at least guard. Correct. And if you don't know how to guard, ask someone how to guard, because there are specific ways to catch or block a punch
that's
if you don't know. I can remember holding the focus pads
yeah.
and holding them incorrectly, holding them straight up with my arms like this and not against my body.
Right.
And by the time I was done, my shoulders hurt so much.
Yeah.
And at the end, Charlie's like...
He's laughing at you.
He's like, really? You tried to hold those up for the whole 15 minutes we
Man,
did this?
Like, who do you think you are?
What are you, an idiot? Oh, my
you
word.
You could break your wrist. As someone holding pads, if you're holding them incorrectly, you could break your wrist, not even fighting.
Oh, yes. No, in fact, I actually, for the first time last night, had my wrist wrapped, my right wrist, because I took a couple weeks off. My birthday was September 12th, and so I took a couple of weeks off to go and...
Oh, happy birthday, dude.
Thank you. Took a couple of weeks off to go and just kind of celebrate life and celebrate family and kind of incorporate a lot of things into that. And so in the last class that I was in, I actually punched incorrectly with my glove and caught my wrist wrong.
Yep.
And for the rest of the class, it was more like pity pat. You know, I couldn't do anything, and my wrist hurt for about... a week after that.
Yeah, well, only a week.
So I had bought wrist wraps. When I started the class, the first thing I did was buy everything else that I needed. So I bought a set of wrist wraps. I just never put them on. I've never been a boxer. I've never done this. And so I had somebody wrap my right wrist for me yesterday for the first time.
Right.
It was really supportive. So I mean, if anybody's interested in a great way to, again, get focused, to relieve some aggression, and this is a different, there are other kickboxing gyms that I've seen around that are filled with heavy bags, and you predominantly spend your time training and going over strikes
Muay
and things like that.
Muay Thai is a lot like that. 18 minutes on a heavy bag, you're done.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I've seen there are these kickboxing places where it's just you in front of a bag.
Right.
This is you in front of a bag if they're doing circuit training, or you're in front of a bag for 2 minutes and then you're off to do something else.
Right.
You're off going through a set of strikes and kicks, and then you're off doing push-ups, or you're off doing whatever, you're moving through a circuit. That's the time you'll spend on a bag.
But
other than that, you're spent in front of another person.
Exactly.
Fighting your way either out of a corner
or
landing strikes on each other, either holding pads or not. But if you're wearing your guards and you're wearing your gloves and you're going at 60%, you're not going to hurt each other.
Right.
You know that if you hurt them, you mess up your chances of progressing, right? You don't want to hurt anybody else. I even take time out because I'm so less experienced than the other guys. The people that I know that have been there for 6 months or a year, a lot of time I'll spend actually with the instructor as my training partner if we've
Absolutely.
Got an odd number of people,
yeah.
because that doesn't take away from anybody else. If I slip wrong and the instructor knows to pull up and not hit me in the face, but if I slip wrong and I mess up somebody else's training or I don't hold the pads in the right way for the strikes they need to do, I'm holding them back from where from the progression they need to do.
Exactly.
And the instructor already knows what I'm here to do, so they're teaching us. So a lot of times that's what I will do. I will take whoever is teaching and I will say, why don't I partner with you?
Yeah.
And that way I can go over the basics of this, because it's still, there's so many things inside of my head to put in, you know, strike patterns and kick patterns and things like that, and to remember what they're all supposed to look like and feel like when they're done slowly and smoothly, is still something that I'm getting up to speed on. And taking off 2 weeks in the middle of that didn't really help for me, you know. So I'm trying to get back into it. So after our board meeting tonight, I'm going to try and rush off the class.
Good for you, man. The best place to practice any kind of moves is in a pool.
Really?
Oh, my God, it's the best. You have that resistance, and you can get to do it slow, and you can feel if you're kicking right. That's how I got the evasive sidekick down. It's a where you jump, you're tucking one leg, and you're throwing a sidekick out as you're evading, as you're escaping a situation.
Really?
Yeah, I learned how to do that in the pool.
Wow,
I got it in my head. You know, you first want to learn the move, then you want to drill the move, then you want to tap that circuit, right? You want to tap that workout.
Correct.
You have to first know what you're doing. Everybody
Correct.
Wants to kick high and fast, and it's like you're not even holding your foot right. You're going to break your foot.
Absolutely. I have hurt my foot against the heavy. Like I said, I had no experience at any of this stuff, you know, and I walked in and I held my hand up. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm new here, I don't know what I'm doing, and I have no idea even how to throw. You said a right middle kick. Can you explain to me what that looks like? You know, I don't know what this looks like. I know how to throw my hands and to keep myself from getting
beat in the face. Like in the middle of a sentence, you just get kicked in the head.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you ask the questions if you need to ask the questions. Yeah. And you know, it's like I said, it's such a great environment, and everybody's pretty cool about it, and everybody has respect for the fact that we were all new. I mean, every skill is a learned skill. Mm-hmm. There was no one who came out of the womb with the ability to do X, Y, or Z, which is a great encouragement for anybody, even if you're an entrepreneur or in business. Right. Any skill that anybody has that they're doing today is a learned skill. And with time and with effort, there's nothing that you can't do that any of us can't do or that any of us can't learn. We may have different difficulties and levels of ability to be able to do things, but everything that someone can do, they had to learn at some point in time, and they started
I agree with you to a point.
To a point, okay.
Because I do feel there is something to be said for having just a knack for something.
Correct. You know. Correct.
But you can hone that. You can still learn.
Correct. Yeah, you can learn the skill. I mean, let's take it to the basics of people who may be office workers. If there's somebody in your office who's exceptional at doing stuff in Word or Excel or any of the other applications.
Right.
They started out exactly where you are. They didn't innately come out of the womb knowing how to do
absolutely
all these other things, right? So if there's something that's going to make your business or your life excel, no matter what it is, no matter whether it's something on a spiritual level or on a physical level or whatever, you can learn those skills. All those skills are attainable for everyone. And that's the thing that I think holds a lot of people back. And because they'll look at somebody and say, well, they're so much better at this than I am. But if you realize that everybody started out as a novice, then it gives you the ability to be able to be, to make mistakes and to be kind to yourself and allow yourself the ability to know that I can get there if I just give myself the time.
And not beat yourself up.
Absolutely.
Like how this
Beat somebody else up.
Like I'm a horrible ground fighter. I'm just not good. I learned certain things. I know what I can do. I know what I should do. But in like business, it's, you know, everybody has a business plan.
Absolutely.
Right? Everybody has a plan. Going into the ring, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Thank you, Mike.
Then it's like, you know, Mike Tyson, thank you. But have a plan for when you get punched in the face.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
Not many people are thinking about that.
I guess that's the beauty of the classes that we're in right now is that they are geared more towards if you find yourself in a situation where you need to defend yourself.
Right.
These are things you can use. You know, yesterday's class, we were throwing a combination and the instructor said, okay, now here's what I want you to do. Every time you throw that combination, you escape to the left or escape to the right. Here's what I want you to do. You're going to put your back foot against the wall. Now you can't escape left or right. You can't escape back. You have to figure out how you're going to get out of the situation so that somebody backs you into a wall, backs you into a corner, how are you going to get out of that?
Right.
So that is getting punched in the face. That is, you know, that is jab, slip, cross, body shot, pepper them, get them out, get them back against the wall, get them against the ropes or whatever. The classes, the way that they're structured and the things that we begin to learn and that they begin to build upon are all based upon if you get punched in the face. What do you do and now how do you get inside of somebody else's range so that you don't get punched in the face again? Getting punched in the face is okay. You don't want to get punched in the face too many times. There's certain shots you can take that are lighter and shorter.
Let's get the punch in the face out of the way and then let's start here. I can't stand it. Well, and that's the difference between that kind of a class and a class you go to where there's 30 bags lined up and that's all you do. Remember, bags do not hit back.
Correct.
So that's the value.
No, these human beings. There are a couple of young kids. The one guy that I trained with last night might be in college, but there are a couple of high school kids in the class. And there's this one high school kid that the instructors say, next to you, and they will point at me or one of the other guys, and they'll say, next to you, that kid has the heaviest hands in this class. And he's probably 16 or 17 years old.
Wow.
He's, you know, he spends most of his time, you know, he's been there for probably 6 months, maybe close to a year. But I have been punched in the face by somebody a third of my age. I'm good with that. I don't need to do that again, you know, because like I said, the natural inclination for me, when they say slip, I usually slip left first and not right first, not knowing what I'm supposed to do. And I usually slip into a punch and I'm like, oh,
Yeah, let's do that again. Can we do that again?
The idea is to not slip into the
correct
punch.
I slipped into a couple of punches. It's about making mistakes, but it's about repetition, and it's about remembering to keep your hands up and remembering how to shell up and remembering
right.
you know, how to do those things and to keep yourself protected. And again, it's about that singular focus. I do not want to be kicked or hit. Right. And if I'm going to get kicked or hit, I want to take the blow in a place that is meaty and built up and can take that kind of punishment. So I want to take that blow on my forearm, or I want to take that blow someplace that's not going to hurt as much. I'm going to take my knocks in life. I'm going to take my knocks in business. I'm going to take my knocks in love. I'm going to take my knocks everywhere. The question comes, what part of my body, what part of my life do I want to expose to that?
Right.
And how well trained am I to come back from when that happens?
And not to get incredibly cliche, you see my Rocky and Rocky dolls.
I do.
It's not like, you know, Rocky says, it's not about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep on moving forward. You know, but it's James is closing his eyes, laughing, his head back. I love Rocky. He's my favorite fictional, even more so than Batman. And I'm a big Batman guy. But
how many you see, Rocky? How many you see?
What's the matter with you?
Three. Hit the one in the middle, Rocky. Hit the one in the middle.
You got to come to my wife and I's class on Wednesdays at 9:30.
I would love to come
because I do that stuff all the time in the middle class.
My eyes keep thinking about that. You know, I can't see no more. Cut me, man, cut me. You know,
I just go into the whole sliced alone thing.
My friend James Beavis.
Anyway, all right. Well, I know James's biggest nightmare is someone yelling out 1-1 and him not knowing what to do.
Wow.
For you fighters out there, for all you combo fighters out there, when you're running drills, you all know what 1-1 means. 1-1-3. 1-1-2.
Yeah, 1-1. I was like, one? What's the second one?
1-1 means
the same
jab,
thing
jab.
Again. Right.
That's what 1-1 means.
Oh, wow.
Jab, jab.
Yeah.
Two is cross. Three is either hook or uppercut, depending on where you were training.
Correct.
Four for me was uppercut. Five was body hook. Six was front kick. Seven was round. I'm just going down the whole slew of still in my head.
I got, you know what? I really do want to come to your class one of these days. I'll take the
Wednesday
time out.
9:30.
Wednesday 9:30 a.m.?
Yep. Give you a guest pass.
Where's the class
about,
at?
Talk about sweating. Oh, my goodness gracious. RWJ over on Sloan Avenue.
Oh, cool.
Right by AMC.
Yeah. I know exactly where you are. Yeah,
It's a wonderful class. My wife and I teach. We teach together. We wear the same thing. It's very cool. We wear gloves, even though it's non-contact. We wear gloves. We do the whole fighter motif thing.
Really?
Yeah. I'm Ferocious. She's Firestarter. That's her name. Her fight name.
Ah.
Very, very cool.
Did she fight?
No, she didn't.
Okay.
No,
I'm
she
just
did
wondering.
Not fight. But she can tear it up. Man. She can tear it up.
So you're telling me next to the 17-year-old, I don't want to get punched in the face by your wife either, is what you're telling me.
I even dare say she'll make the 17-year-old look like they're sleeping.
Whoa. I'm telling you right now, there are some really, really well-trained. And again, the funny thing that I notice, and this is a comment on what Frank said about taking both classes. The people that I notice that seem to have a better mastery, as I watch them progress, even over the month and a half, 2 months that I've been there, there are people who are spending time doing both disciplines. Because the kickboxing class is 6 to 7, and then 7 to 8 is the jiu-jitsu class.
Right, right.
So some of them will come right off the floor,
sure,
high five out, change into their gi, bow, walk right back on the mat,
right,
and start and train for the next hour. So right. The guys that I see that are progressing better than I am, now again, I took a couple weeks off, but the people that I see that are progressing better than I am are those who are doing both of those disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see the advantage of it. It's just that I have so many things that I'm doing right now. I really need to keep my singular focus on 1-1.
Yeah, do your thing. 1-1.
1-1.
Focus on 1-1. Get that down, and then we'll move to 2, 3, 4 down the list. All right, so here's a question that my wife always asks, and since she's not here today, I'm going to ask it. I want you to describe your dream Trenton.
It would be peaceful. We would see a revitalization of areas of the city. As I said, when I was in college, I studied political science, public administration. So one of the things that we discussed back then was the revitalization of the city of Trenton. And back then in the 1980s, that was supposed to be starting here in Mill Hill. The mayor had moved down to this area. That's why you have the gas street lamps and all the other things. And that was supposed to spread. That was 1985. Here we are in 2019, and that revitalization hasn't really spread to all the areas and all the aspects of the city. And I think if we could get that happening,
I think the advantage of the new school and it bringing some of the old Votech type things back into the city and giving people opportunities to do things that they may not have had the opportunity to do directly in their own school going forward, I would see a continued growing, vibrant arts and cultural community. But I would also see the city focused, as you and I both know from our experience with the Trent House, focus more on its historical importance to the nation. There wouldn't be a nation if there wasn't for this little tiny area, pretty much where we sit right now. We're here near Mill Hill Park, where one of the battles happened, and we're up the street from the Trent House, and we're down the street from the old barracks, and all those things that happened right here in Trenton are so significant. So I would see the city play up more of its historical importance. Mm-hmm. I would see a greater emphasis on arts and culture than we even have today. I would see a greater embrace of even some more of the diversity that the city has come to embody today. I think education, arts and culture, and history are things that could help move the city forward. But I would love to see, again, investment in areas where people have an opportunity to learn. One of the things that I get out of being where I am in my life is that I went from a white-collar job to a blue-collar job. I went from working in IT, high-tech, to working with my hands every day. But I also got the opportunity to work with a family business. So one of the things I think is important are examples for people to be able to see, mm-hmm. for people to be able to know that not only is something possible, it's possible for me or someone like me.
Right.
So I think that the entrepreneurship things that are happening within the high school here in the city and some of the other opportunities that are going on with Boyd and all the other things that are happening here around the area, I think there are some great things happening. So arts and culture, history, education, revitalization in such a way, because my thing has always been violence is a language, just as profanity is a language. Violence is a language that is cross-cultural. If the only words that I have are violent, if the only way that I can express myself is by fighting or by shooting or by doing whatever, it's because I have a lack of language. If I've never been taught the words to express the anger or the emotions that I have within me, then the only language I have is violence. And it's a language that cuts across cultures.
Sure.
If I punch you, shoot you, stab you, or do whatever, you know that I was probably angry about something. So the violence that we have going on right now around the city, I think is a direct result of people not necessarily having the language to be able to express those things that they necessarily may feel. When I talk about education, one of the things that has always been very, very important for me, when I moved out of my house, which was in North Trenton, to move to this house in West Trenton, I gave away, I gave Darren Green, I gave him probably 70% of my library worth of books. I gave him like 45 or 50 boxes worth of books. It took us close to an hour to cart all these books into the center over there where he is. And I just gave them away because one of the mentors that I had, I used as a role model, said one of the things you want to do is leave for your kids any notes that you've taken, create them, write them in blank books, and leave them on a shelf about how you created your success and how you're going forward, and leave them your library of books. Leave them the books that you read that helped you get to where you are in life so that they have the literature, and be that the, you know, for be that the Bible, or be that the Quran, or be that the Torah, or be that whatever book it is, however you got to where you are, leave those books there for them as something going forward. So when I was moving out of my house, I was going to have a lot more space, but I didn't know what I was going to do with all these books. So I gave them all away so that somebody else could have them as something to use. Again, when we get back to the literacy stuff, I talk about the technical training and all that other stuff, but I think that literacy and learning are huge, and you know, what's clicking in my mind right now is I have some other things I'm going to have to talk about within the next week that deal with the violence and things in town and things like that. And that has always been my thought, is that violence is a result of not having a better way to express yourself other than whatever it is and whatever implement, either my fist or whatever implement of war or whatever I can pick up. So if I can get my point across in another way and have you understand me without me having to resort to that, I would recommend that we find those alternatives for people who think their only alternative is a gun or a knife or their fist or whatever.
Right, gotcha.
You know, so
cool, man. Well, James, I'll tell you what, I want to know this one more thing, is where can people
find you? Where can people see you? Where can people hear you? Where can they go to experience all things James Peoples online?
Well, I am JT Peoples at everything. I was fortunate enough to be able to get that. I was fortunate enough to get JT Peoples at Gmail, at Instagram.
Wait, P-E-E?
P-E-E, two E's, correct. It's a very long story. It actually traces
to... I thought it was P-O-P-L-E-S.
Absolutely not. So the origin of this name, as best we can trace right now, traces to a Scottish woman from the Columbia, South Carolina area who probably had a little bit of a dalliance with someone of a little bit of a darker hue than her Scottish heritage. And so in finding out my father's history, when I found out about his birthday, I found out who his mother and father were. His mother was a single mom. My father was born out of wedlock, and I didn't know that until I asked my brother, and my brother sent me his baptismal certificate from the church that he had gotten, and it had my father's name and it had my mother's name, and my mother's last name is Peoples. And that name is very, in the Columbia, South Carolina area, that name is very, very prevalent amongst the African-American community down there. So somebody actually reached out to me on Facebook one night and started giving me some of the history of the people from down there. And it turns out he's a distant cousin of mine, but I learned more about that. And my older brother has traveled down there and done some of the research down there. So there's more that we know now, but in the last couple of years, we've found more out about my father's history than I had known in 40 or almost 50 years.
Who traveled down there, John or
John? John did.
John did.
So John is actually, and it was very funny because when he went down there, the people that I had to send him to go meet, one of the people in my family from down in South Jersey, a guy named Irwin Smith, who's a part of this family, gave me contacts for my brother John to talk to. Okay. So I sent my brother down to Columbia, South Carolina, and I say, John Peoples, call John Peoples and talk to your other cousin, Joe Peoples. So there are family members that we have that share the same names. So here's my brother talking to somebody with the exact same name that he has. But it's just so crazy, you know. There's so much history that has to be just in my own family that I really need to garner and I really need to get.
I could have sworn that Joe on his card.
Absolutely not. It is P-E-E-P-L-E-S.
All right, so you got JT Peoples with two E's.
L-E-S. P-E-E-P-L-E-S at Gmail, at Instagram, on Twitter, on... I had it as a domain for a while. I'm James T. Peoples, but it's at att.net. It was my original email address that I've had for... Since there were email addresses, because I was in the tech field, I've had an email address for forever. So when AT&T had WorldNet way back in the day, I still have that email address, and that's what I registered my Facebook account with. But I'm still JT Peoples. If you look me up under that, you'll find me there.
So you didn't have to go into this whole thing about AT&T. No one knows what you're talking about. I'm just saying on
off
Facebook.
In the weeds.
On
James
Facebook,
is off in the weeds.
You're at James T. Peoples
James T.
on
Peoples
Facebook.
On Facebook, correct. Absolutely.
All right, dude. I need a nap. Man, I'm exhausted.
You ready to spar now?
I'm ready to spar. Because, right before James came on the show, like last night, he texts me. He sends me a text. I'm going to read you this text. He says, hey, I got shin guards. I got this. I got that. I don't have a mouthpiece. And I don't have a cup. Do we want to put on gear and train together tomorrow morning before we get on the air? Do you believe that my ass getting kicked will make the conversation more palatable? I said, well, that sounds great, but listen, let's do the interview first and then see if there's a reason to spar.
And what was my response?
You said to me, oh, I trust that by the time we're done, I'm going to want to punch you in the face.
But unlike James, I know how to block. Man. Yeah,
that's why I don't have cauliflower ears. Thank you very much.
Teep, teep, teep.
Teep the peep. Well, James, yes, I want to say... I know we kid around a lot, and I kind of like beat you up a lot verbally. I like to pummel you verbally. But I love you, man. I really love you too, man. And I think you're like totally legit. I think you're one of these like very rare people that does what he says, has integrity, has just a way about himself that you're totally a giver. I consider you not only my peoples, but a very, very close friend of mine, and I really appreciate your friendship, and I look forward to just moving down the road with you, brother.
Thank you, man. That was... Frank, that if you knew what, and you probably do know some of what I've been going through lately, that was probably one of the most humbling things. And
what was the most humbling? Really?
Yeah. Go back and listen to it. It'll be on the air right here. You said some really kind things about me, and I really want to live up to every day just being a man of my word and doing the things that I need to do. So thank you, man. It's been an absolute joy getting to know you and getting to be your friend. You and your wife have been so much fun, and just, if you guys don't know them, you really need to find them somewhere and just sit down with them and laugh with them. They're great people. They're great people of strength and integrity and of faith. And you couldn't have better friends.
Thank you, dude.
Thanks, man.
Well, with that, this has been another episode of Trenton Waves.
Sasso out.
You've been listening to the Trenton Waves podcast. Visit us online at trentonwaves.com.
I'm Ayana Iman, and I'm the host of Authentic Combos. I am hosting the next installation, Breaking Up With Broke, A Conversation on Black and Brown Wealth, on Saturday, November 9th at the Grounds for Sculpture. I hope to see you there. Tickets can be purchased at breakingupwithbroke.eventbrite.com.
What's up, everyone? I'm Von Leek, host of the Stay Woke Podcast, the latest and greatest podcast featuring games, reviews, debates, and interviews. Tune in every week as my guests and I discuss different social issues, as well as what's going on in pop culture, music, and tons more. So, subscribe now. And until then, always remember to stay woke. Yeah, yeah.